Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food. Culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. With my Below the Mason-Dixon charm, I spotlight the culture of the food movement. From chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking seersucker and swappers. If you're listening live to Hot Grease via HeritageRadioNetwork.com, give us a buzz. We have a live call-in number. Our number here in the studio is 718-497-2128. If you listen to Hot Grease all the time, I'm sure you already know the South is rising. And in the studio to talk Southern food, BK, and the latest Southern food headlines is the chef and owner of Seersucker Brooklyn, Robert Newton. Welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network.
Pleasure to be over here.
So we're going to go straight in. Every week on the show, Robert, I do food headlines. And today there are like three Southern-focused food headlines I want to talk about. First up is Sean Brock was on Charlie Rose.
I saw that.
I know. Isn't that cool? So what do you think about... really, at this point, I think that means that Southern food, Sean Brock, is really mainstream. What do you think?
Seems so. I mean, I met Sean at Meatopia one hot summer day in July. And we don't know each other very well, but he was a cool guy. Does really cool food. I haven't eaten there. But what he's doing for Southern food is really, really nice and really good. And exploring Southern traditions like we do over at Seersucker. It's really cool.
Yeah, I was at Southern Foodway Alliance. I didn't meet him, but I actually danced with his wife. I'm sure she probably remembers it because I was dressed up like a Muscadine.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's super great to have. You don't find too many food people on Charlie Rose.
You definitely arrive when you make it to Charlie Rose.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly.
Who's from North Carolina? I think you probably know that.
Yeah, he's from North Carolina, and you know he owns Husk and what's the other?
No, Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose.
Get out of here!
Anderson, North Carolina, indeed.
Damn, I did not know that. How did you know that, Robert?
Because I'm a big fan of Charlie Rose.
How did he get rid of the Southern accent?
It comes out, you know. I watch him pretty regularly. It comes out. Oh, so it's very subtle.
Okay, I need to like Google him and like do an in depth. I'm sure he has like a biography or something out. Totally. I did not know he was from North Carolina. Cool. Next up in food headlines, Southern focused. The Wire actor, what's his name? Opened a grocery store in
Wendell something.
Wendell, I think his last
Pierce.
Yeah. Right. How did I not know them? Unfortunately, I don't know him as you know the person in the guy in The Wire. Did you watch The Wire?
Loved The Wire. Was sad when it ended.
I know, right?
Captivating. And I didn't like season two that much though.
They kind of all blur.
The Harbor. Me too, but the Harbor guys, I remember that one as not being my favorite.
Yeah, so Wendell Pierce, I also know him from, he was in Terry McMillan's, the author. She did a movie back in the day, and he was in that. And then he was in Tremé. I think most people know him from The Wire and Tremé. He's been in a lot of movies. But he's actually opening a grocery store in New Orleans. And it was in New York Times and a bunch of other publications. It's a really big deal.
Totally.
What are your thoughts about New Orleans? And have you visited Tremé in New Orleans?
No, I haven't. I've been to New Orleans a few times. It's not my strong suit, but I appreciate the food and the culture and the history there. And I think what he's doing is really important. I mean, considering the catastrophe that happened, they've made a lot of improvement and gained a lot of ground. But I think there's still certain areas there, the Ninth Ward in particular, probably, that's still suffering. And I think what he's doing and bringing fresh vegetables to people as opposed to like a bodega or a deli, I think it's great. And you got to commend that.
Yeah, he's totally, I mean, doing the same thing, just a different aspect of what you've done in Carroll Gardens, is building a community of people around, you know, food, bringing people together around good food.
If you don't have that, what do you have?
Exactly. And last up, we kind of talked about Sean Brock, Hugh Atchison, same thing. I just want to shout out, because I'm a huge fan of Hugh Atchison. He's from, well, he's not from my hometown, but he actually has a restaurant in my hometown. And he was recently on the food scene here on Heritage Radio Network. Cool. That book is gorgeous.
I own it. It's a great book. I'm a fan of his food. I don't know him personally. I was just in Athens about 6 weeks ago, and I ate at 5 and 10. Yeah.
Oh, man.
What do you know about Weaver D's?
What do you mean what I know about? I grew up 4 blocks. My home house is 4 blocks from Weaver D's.
It's not just an R.E.M. song.
Exactly. I grew up literally 4 blocks or less from Weaver D's.
I know that area.
Where else did you go when you were in Athens?
I went to the National Weaver D's. I went to Doggone Good Barbecue right next to the National. Do you know that place?
Oh, that must be new.
It is new. The guy that runs it used to have a haircut place there. Now he makes barbecue.
So that whole area, for folks who are listening, you know Athens, Georgia, where the National is, that was hot corner back in the day.
All right.
So that was a part of Athens where they were all African-American businesses, like a blocks of them. So it's actually called Hot Corner. So the old-time folks from Athens called that Hot Corner, but now it's like the takeover in terms of great food. You have the National there. Farm 255.
Yeah, that's one street over. I don't know. It's over by 40 Watt. Or whatever.
Yeah, right by 40 Watt. Oh, okay, yeah. Man.
I've eaten there, too.
Yeah, 40 Watt. Oh,
no,
Farm.
No.
Farm.
Yeah.
They have great brunch, and then their burger spot is in Atlanta as well. So we're chatting up about some
5 and
food.
10 was really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good. I ate the bar. It's nice.
The food
nice
is
job.
Really good. Shout out to Hugh. If you want to listen to more of Hugh Atchison, he's actually, he was on the food scene last week. Go to Heritage Radio Network and click it in. Yeah, we're going to talk more Southern food with Robert, but we're going to take a quick break. And we're going to get into all things seersucker in a second. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
I could pretend that I was okay. I'd wind around the parties drinking hands. I could pretend with you when no longer hear the band. I will lie, found a love I had to rediscover. I was emotionally scarred. We could not get it away.
This program was sponsored by White Oak Pastures. The Harris family has lived and farmed White Oak Pastures for 145 years. They are committed to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. Their mission? We take care of the land and the herd, and they take care of us. For more information about their cattle and their farm, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. We are talking the Rising South with the owner of Seersucker Brooklyn. He's actually Southern born, but New York based. Robert, where are you from?
Arkansas.
What part of Arkansas?
The Ozarks up north. Small town called Mountain Home.
The Ozone?
The Ozarks.
Oh, okay.
I don't know anything about the Ozone.
What? I've never heard of that. Give me something. Give me a bigger town.
Fayetteville.
Okay.
Harrison. It's all small. There's no big town.
Okay, so Fayetteville. Okay. So
it's up close to Missouri. It's really beautiful, but really remote.
Small town guy, Southerner. How did you get into food?
I grew up with food. We had a garden every summer. My dad grew up on a subsistence farm where they raised their own hogs and ground their own corn. And I mean, food was really, really important to my family. I didn't grow up grinding my own corn, fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it. But we just had a garden and we canned every summer and picked beans and canned tomatoes and hunted for squirrels and caught catfish and all that jazz. And it you know, I went to college and all that stuff, but I just didn't really see myself doing some kind of suit and tie thing and just found food.
So when you left Arkansas, did you start traveling around the South or traveling around the world? Or how were you influenced by other cultures? Because I feel like as Southerners, we travel everywhere, but it seems like the older we get, we just come back to our roots in terms of Southern food and just general Southern traditions.
I totally agree with all of that. I think the path for a chef, when you begin cooking and begin trying to find out your own style, you get as far away from what you know, which is Southern food. So I worked at Le Cirque with the Cambodian chef Sota, and then I worked at Tableau with Floyd doing Indian food. And, you know, then over the span of your career, you come back to what is truly inherent to you. And I just want to continue to explore Southern food and where I'm from and, you know, people like Edna Lewis and things that she brought to the table. No pun intended. You just come full circle, you know.
So we were talking a little bit about your travels to Athens, and I follow you on Twitter. I follow you on Facebook, and I saw you actually tweeting when you were going to different places. It was about 2 or 3 months ago. Where did you go? Were you driving?
Yeah, I love a road trip.
Oh God, I can't stand being in a car that long.
That's no. where you really get to see it. I think
I'm a little citified on that. Sorry,
I hear you. I hear you.
Where'd you go?
Whew, I've made a couple in the last 6 months because I like to go down there and get inspired and to see what's going on and maybe uncover some historical something. I think the trip you're talking about is Carrie, my business partner and girlfriend, went to Arkansas for Thanksgiving to be with my mom. And then we went and did a Delta Tamale tour, Swedish tour of the Delta. That's probably what you're talking about. And that was awesome. That's really, really, there's some cool stuff going on in Mississippi. But then the most recent tour, I did Charlotte, Athens, Little Rock, and then on my way back, I did Birmingham, Atlanta, and then Richmond.
Oh my gosh, we have to talk about Richmond. Let's talk about Richmond.
I'm ready. I think it's a really cool town.
Yeah, I mean, Charlotte and Richmond I want to talk about because I feel
Price's
like...
Chicken Coop?
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of my best friends lives in Charlotte. I went there. You have Price's Chicken Coop, and you also can go, you know, to the other neighborhood, and you can go to Den and DeLuca. Only Den and DeLuca outside of, you know, below the Mason-Dixon is in Charlotte.
Two very different establishments.
It's two very, but the Chicken Coop chicken is, wow, it's off the chain.
I ate it in the car. Oh, man, it was so good. So good.
So tell me about Richmond. I have a love affair with Richmond. And I was having a conversation with my mentor and Dr. Jessica B. Harris about Richmond and food and like the rich history that folks don't know about Richmond. Because James Hemings, which was Thomas Jefferson's cook, actually died in Richmond. He left and went to Richmond and was cooking in Richmond and all that kind of stuff. So I just feel like Richmond gets left off the map. Where'd you eat there?
Le Maire. We stayed in the Jefferson Hotel, which is amazing. It's really historical and beautiful. And then we only stayed there one night, so we stayed there, ate there, and then the next day we got up and just toured the area called Carytown, I believe. It's over by the Virginia Commonwealth. A lot of antebellum architecture.
Yeah, the architectural.
It's really, really gorgeous. And then I sort of friendly with Jason Alley, who owns Comfort. I don't know if you know Comfort.
I know the name of the place, but, you know, I don't know chefs.
Yeah. He does a really nice job. It's very, you know, serious, real Southern food, you know, fried catfish.
What did you find that throughout your travels to all of these different cities? You're living here in Brooklyn, the place where everyone is looking at Brooklyn. And really, I would say Brooklyn outside of the South is where a lot of Southern food is happening. What similarities did you see in all these different cities in terms of food culture?
An importance on local and seasonality, probably not as hyper-seasonal as I like to do it, but people are really into knowing where their food comes from. And I think, you know, things happen a little bit earlier here in New York, but down there, that whole movement is picking up steam about, you know, having more gardens or knowing your farmer, knowing where your stuff comes from. Organic to a lesser degree. It's a little bit, you know, it's cost prohibitive sometimes, but nonetheless important. Just knowing where your food comes from. I think that's a common theme you're seeing maybe throughout America.
Yeah. I mean, organic, I think, is dead. Don't you agree?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Sometimes I just don't trust what's in the soil and what they put on it, and Monsanto, and I don't trust.
Yeah, when I say dead, I mean the term is so mass marketed now. When you have big organization like Monsanto saying sustainable, organic. It's I don't even know if I want to use that word anymore.
But see, that's where it's important to know your farmers. You know, I know the people that I buy stuff from at the Carroll Gardens Market every Sunday. I work with them. I'm working with them right now to plant stuff that I'm going to use this summer. And they may not be certified organic, but I know what they're doing to the vegetables.
Right.
That is really, really important to me and as a restaurateur so that I can pass it on to the guest. That's really, really important to me.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get more into Seersucker. You actually bought me some trees. Oh, I'm so excited. Listeners, keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. We will be right back with Robert Newton.
All I seek is perfection. Ain't no secrets, I'ma eat that for breakfast. Keep her close to me like lyrics. She spoke to me in the middle of the winter. Summer, let her close to me.
All these stars out and these people know my name. I can be so pretentious, but he likes me all the same.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and archives on heritageradionetwork.com. If you're just tuning in live, we are chatting with Robert Newton. He's the owner of the neighborhood joint in Carroll Gardens. Two neighborhood joints, Smith Canteen and Seersucker Brooklyn. So I got to go straight in on the fried chicken at Seersucker Brooklyn.
Here we go.
I will have to be honest with you and tell you, I came, literally, you hadn't been open 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have the fried chicken then. I went back twice on Tuesday, because you only have it on Tuesday. No,
okay.
I had it both times, and I'm here to tell you, that damn chicken is good.
That means a lot.
I'm here, and look, and anyone who knows me and they listen to my show, I talk about fried chicken all the time. It tasted like the fried chicken my great aunt used to put in a brown paper sack.
Wow.
And then you go somewhere else and you eat it later. Like you go to Six Flags and they put the chicken in the paper. You know what I mean, Robert.
I so know what you mean. And the paper bag has a little grease stain on it, but you don't care.
And the chicken is cold.
And there's little
that chicken is
of
good.
Fat
What's up with your chicken? How did you get that, straight back to the South taste?
It's taken on a life of its own, to be honest. We do it all the time. Now we don't do it just on Tuesdays anymore.
Oh, really?
It has a life force of its own.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Brining, you know, a saline solution is important. Buttermilk bath is important. The right mix of flour and spices is important. And then peanut oil is important. We fry
of course.
Peanut oil.
So had you been, was this a recipe, chicken recipe that you've been using for a while and you just decided to bring the Seersucker Brooklyn, or did you like really work it before opening the restaurant?
I put a lot of thought into it. I, you know, it took 2 years from the inspiration for Seersucker to the time we opened the door, and I had done a lot of research. I went to Prince's. In Nashville, which
of
is really,
course.
Really good.
Hot chicken.
Yeah. And then Princess. I like Gus's. Gus's is probably one of my favorites in Memphis.
Yeah.
Which is a lot like the chicken coop. But anyway, I really liked what both of those places were doing, but I didn't want something so insanely hot. Like, Prince's is delicious, but it's too much for me. So I just sort of developed a hybrid of the two and developed my own crust as, you know, a little bit of cornmeal, a little bit of flour, a little bit of cornstarch. Just kind of played with it and...
Well, I'm here to tell you, forget all the food and wine stamps of approval and all the press that you've gotten. You have my stamp of approval.
That means a lot.
The chicken is on point. And
I don't take that lightly.
Okay. I mean, from a Southern girl, I'm here to tell you. And I love, you talked a little bit about Carroll Gardens Farmers Market. And I look at your list of suppliers. You have some of my favorite people on there. Edward Wallace and Sons, who are huge supporters of Heritage Radio Network.
Cool.
They have great ham. And I see you use their stuff.
Yeah, I use two of their hams. Well, I use a lot of their products. I use their sausage and a country ham fritter dish that we do. I use their Soriano in a really just a dish that's an appreciation of ham. It's that ham, which is aged over 400 days, with a warm biscuit, a little house pickle, and some boiled dressing, which we should talk about, because boiled dressing is important. And then I use their wigwam ham in a chicken dish that we do, which is the original Edwards ham. It's what they started way back in the day.
Shout out to Edwards.
I love him. I love him. You ever been there?
No, I haven't, but I think Jack has been there before. I know Patrick has.
It's a crazy cool little shop. It's tiny.
So I'm going to talk about two things. You want to talk about boiled dressing. Okay, I'm here to tell you, I do not like dressing, but we can talk about it. And well, we've talked
about it before.
Look, no.
It's cool. It's historical.
No,
it's important.
I want to get this on record because I've talked about dressing. I think it was Thanksgiving. We broke down the anatomy of Southern dressing and stuffing and.
Oh yeah, I'm talking about something completely
different. What is this, God? School me.
Oh my goodness, this is my moment. It's my moment to shine right here. Boiled dressing was basically the vinaigrette in the early 1800s South. Because if you think about pre-industrial revolution, we didn't have extracted oils. Only rich people could get olive oil. So people had to come up with something to dress their vegetables besides, you know, bacon grease or whatever. So this is eggs, butter, flour, vinegar. Those are things that every farm family had. And you cook it kind of like hollandaise. And then
I wonder if this is called something else regionally.
I don't know. Edna Lewis knows about it.
Oh, I actually have seen that in the that also reminds me of kind of giblet a little bit with the egg when they make the dressing with the egg.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Giblet gravy. My mom makes that. I love that.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm talking about at all. Okay. This is more like a mayonnaise.
Okay, well, I have the taste of country cooking, so I need to go stroll through that.
Just stroll in and see me sometime. I'll give you some.
Smith Canteen, love it. So glad you opened it. It's like my new spot now to go meet for coffee. My favorite thing there is the everything croissant.
I should have brought you one of those.
It's the everything croissant. You brought me a bag of a whole bunch of sweet stuff. I love the everything croissant there.
It's tasty.
How'd you come up with that?
Before we opened, I went through a phase where I was obsessed with making my own everything spice. So I was poaching scallops and dipping, crusting it and everything. And like making your own garlic chips and not buying, like, you know what I mean? Like real, making your own. So I developed my own recipe. And then I was trying to come up, you know, trying a couple of sandwiches and et cetera, because I knew what we wanted to do there. And I just took that obsession and moved it over to the croissant. Because I didn't want to do bagels, but I wanted to have a really kicking turkey sandwich. And that's the first sandwich I developed. And that sandwich is kind of like my homage to Thanksgiving, because it's like a sage mayonnaise. You know, sage is important in dressing, and there's bacon.
Without a doubt.
Where's a sandwich without iceberg? So there's iceberg on there, and it's really, really good. I can't eat many of them anymore because you just develop a problem with your waistline.
Yeah, croissants, you know, but they're good. They're not as. Yours is like right in the middle. It's not like super buttery. It's not dry.
Yeah.
It's just a good croissant. I really love it. I love everything that you're doing.
With bacon right there every day.
At Smith Canteen.
Thank you.
So what's next? I know that you have rolled out a cocktail menu. What should we expect in terms of sneak preview of spring menu at Seersucker?
Yeah, surprisingly, it goes against the stereotype of Southern food. I'm really into the vegetarian dishes that I work on. And right now I'm obsessed with, we're getting green peanuts from North Carolina and I'm braising them and then make sort of like boiled peanuts, really. And then I'm making a puree out of that. So it almost comes across like hummus. It's really creamy. And the cool byproduct of that is it's completely vegan, but it gives you that feeling of that vegetarians, I think, so often look for is richness in a dish. And then I'm just putting, like right now it's a Werner fricassee. It's Brussels sprouts and black trumpets and sexy things on the top. But when we get morels and asparagus and peas and fiddleheads, it's all going to be on this nest of boiled peanut puree. It's really, really good.
I'm excited about that. So for folks who are listening and they're sitting at their desk now and they're like, "Ooh, I'm gonna go there for dinner." Are you open on Mondays?
No, we're closed completely on Mondays, but we do we're open the other 6 days of the week.
And Smith Canteen is open every day,
7 days.
And your website, Robert?
SeersuckerBrooklyn.com.
He's on Facebook, he's on Twitter. Robert, thank you so much. I mean, we could go on and on and on. You know this, right? We're going to have to chop it up afterwards and really get down to it. Thank you so much, Robert, for coming on Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Listeners, stick with us. One more segment. Swappers, BK Swappers.
my new tricks. And believe me, the cats on the street are stealing hard. The cats on the street are stealing hard. Some cats with the bad wanna be his part. Check me out. That's where the bustle starts.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced and engineered by the great Jack Inslee. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. All right, folks, we're back. Swap time. I know you're wondering, swappers, what swappers? We have the co-organizers of BK Swappers in the studio, Meg Pasca, Jane Lanier. Meg, welcome back to Hot Grease. And Jane, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me again.
So BK Swappers celebrating 2 years. What? I can't believe it.
You were at the first one.
You know I was about to say that.
That's when I first met you.
I put the spank on it. I was at the first one, huh? It's been 2 years. I actually was in Saratoga Springs a few months ago, and I mentioned swappers, and they were like, oh, yeah, Saratoga Springs has a swap group.
It's
and
crazy.
I'm thinking, yeah, yeah, so everywhere. This is a question I have asked Meg first. So did BK Swappers really birth all these swapping groups?
Kind of, in that, you know, people have been swapping food in this sort of context for a long time. But we, you know, we, Kate Payne, who was my original partner in this, we actually met here at Heritage. We went here and we decided this is actually the birthplace of BK Swappers, this place right here.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't even know that. That's great.
Yeah, y'all met in the studio
today. That's awesome.
I don't know if it was necessarily in the studio. I think that we were sitting in Roberta's having lunch. And we were talking, you know, Kate was really into, you know, and is very into canning and stuff. And I'm a beekeeper, so I always have honey. And she was like, you know, would you be into like maybe trading some marmalade for some honey? And I'm like, that sounds awesome.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah. We all had lunch afterwards. Duh.
Yeah, that was like basically, like, we were like, well, you know, it would be really fun since we, you know, we're both sort of submersed in this little food culture, that we could just get a bunch of our friends together and just have an event, like a little potluck, and then everyone could just sort of trade some of the things that they've got like stocked up in their larder, and it'd be really fun. And so we kind of ran with it, and 2 years ago was our first swap. Kate ended up moving off to Austin, where she had her own swap, and Jane has been kind of like running stuff from there. And we got a little write up in New York Magazine. Was it New York Times? Sorry.
And
New York Magazine.
And New York Magazine. And then all of a sudden, like swaps were popping up all over the place.
So Jane, let me ask you this: do you think that this swapping thing? Because I'm gonna be honest. Sometimes we, and I'll say we. Or people in Brooklyn like to think that they invented stuff. What do you think about swapping now and swapping through the decades? Did it always have this same interaction that it has now?
I think so. I mean, I think it's an age-old concept. You know, yeah. There's been ladies having holiday cookie swaps. You know, I think the idea of BK Swappers is such an old-school one in the sense of, you know, if you were a canner and a pickler and somebody who put up all your produce for the season, you know, you've got a whole closet full, you know, your cellar or whatever filled with all your stuff. So the idea of being able to swap, I think it's, you know, it's a long ago idea of, you know, people saying, oh, I'll give you three of my raspberry jams for a couple of your, you know, your apricot or whatever it might be. I think what we're doing, you know, I don't think any of us think that we invented it by any means, but I think that we brought it into a pretty interesting Brooklyn world. You know, we kind of tapped into the idea of a barter economy, which I think is really popular and really interesting, and the whole DIY movement and the food passion that so many people living here in Brooklyn now share.
And that was my question, I guess this is for Meg, about the impacts in terms of social and the economic impacts of BK Swappers, or even people throughout the country that have these informal or formal swap groups. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I could just say from a personal perspective that I've met and developed really great working relationships with a lot of people that I've met at these swaps. You know, I've got you know, people who have been writing some for my blog, and, you know, sometimes I'll contribute to theirs. I think that Jane's probably had the same sort of experience.
Absolutely.
And I think that also these swaps serve as sort of like an incubator for these young home cooks who kind of want to use the swap and the people at the swap as a sounding board for their ideas. And so each swap has been really interesting because people just generally want to top themselves at each one. We have a lot of the same swappers that come, and they basically just keep pushing the envelope and trying to top themselves. So it's interesting to see how these people evolve, their recipes evolve, and then sometimes they turn into actual businesses. So that's been a really wonderful thing to sort of watch grow.
And what about the economic aspect of it in terms of swapping? Because I think about swapping growing up in the South. People swapped very informally, like, oh, I have extra collard greens in the, you know, oh, I'll swap you for chow chow or what have you. But in terms of the economic piece of that, particularly for young people who are in cities all over the country, do you think they're saving money by swapping? Of course.
Yeah. I mean, I look in my refrigerator now and I have shelves filled with amazing stuff that I probably wouldn't have bought in a shop because it would have been some fancy jar that cost $18
exactly.
or something like that. You know, I've got lemon curd and snap pea pickles and preserved lemons and caramel sauce and hot sauce. So much stuff. And I probably wouldn't have gone to Dina DeLuca or some other fancy shop and spent crazy amounts of money on it.
Exactly. So this Sunday, right?
This Sunday.
So folks are listening, they're like, BK Swappers, I want to go.
You can.
Can they go? Because
yes.
How many spaces? A lot of spaces?
Usually what we do are events that can hold only about 40 or 50 people.
Yeah.
Because you get more than that and the swap gets a little too hectic. But what we're doing on Sunday at Third Ward, starting at 12:30, on Sunday, March 18th, we're doing an open house, so anybody can come. If you're just interested in checking out the swap, we're going to have a whole day's worth of demos and talks. We're going to have a couple alternate swaps. We're going to do a cookbook swap, so you can bring in your old cookbooks, and we'll have a table full of cookbooks. It's a leave one, take one. We're going to do a non-edible swap, because over the years, we've always had people ask us, you know, can I bring in my jewelry or my, you know, the lotion I made or whatever? And then we'll do the actual swap at 4 o'clock. So you do have to RSVP to participate in the food swap, and those are sold out, unfortunately. But anybody can come on Sunday and just hang out, introduce themselves, check out the whole scene, meet everybody,
so
and stay all day.
So people need to bring something. Do they need to? So we know the food swap is sold out. So if they're going to come to the open house, should they still bring a cookbook, or can they?
Only just, if they want. You can just show
okay.
up. Totally just show up.
It's a potluck, too. It functions as a potluck, too, because we all like to eat while we're swapping, and you work up a real appetite in all the hysteria. So it functions as a potluck, too. So we'll have some refreshments there and stuff, and people will be bringing some food to sort of sample out. And
it's really a social occasion in a great way.
And man, what demos are going to be there?
Well, there's going to be a pickling demo. Jane's been organizing most of the demos, so she'd be a good person to
sort of. I'm going to do a little gravlax, like a salt cure kind of a thing. We've got people talking about baby food. The woman who wrote the New York Times article is going to do a baby food swap, baby food demo. What else do we have? We've got some small business owners are going to do a little roundtable talk about how to start their own business. We've got a whole bunch of different
stuff. Swap to the next level. See, this is BK again, you know, elevating,
making it happen.
So folks, if you're listening, BK Swappers, you guys are on
Facebook.
We are. And
BK
Twitter.
Swappers. Mm-hmm.
BK Swappers, and tickets are
free through Eventbrite, and you can also look on Third Ward on their blog to find out more information about the event on Sunday, March 18th at 12:30.
Cool. Meg Pasca, Jane
Lerner.
What did I call you?
It's okay.
What did I say, Jane? What?
I don't know. Something.
Jane Lerner, sorry. I know your name. Meg Pasca, thank you so much
for
coming on Hot
Grease.
Thank
you.
I really appreciate it. Folks, check out BK Swappers on Facebook or Twitter. And listeners, thank you again for listening to Hot Grease. You can join me every Monday at 3:30 at HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.